Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. It is a Motown-esque Thursday edition of the Triple Option with RBKD. I'm Rod Babers. You can always hit me up via Twitter. BK, the real MVP, is at Brad Keltner in the Twitterverse. And Kevin Dunn is at KevinDunn01 in the Twitterverse. All right, gentlemen, there's some big news happening in Cowboy Country. Actually, a lot of news happening in Cowboy Country. Dallas Cowboys have, and no, before we get to the Cowboys news actually related to a Cowboys coach. We'll get to the Dallas Cowboys upgrading their defensive coaching staff. But this news broke today, guys, and I thought it was very strange. So Kellen Moore, who actually was the top candidate to replace to replace Brian Harsin at Boise State, and then decided to stay with the Cowboys. And earlier today, it broke that the Philadelphia Eagles have interest in Kellen Moore for their head coaching position, and that they actually want to pursue Kellen Moore, at least interview Kellen Moore for the head coaching position now with the vacancy, now that Doug Peterson has been ousted there. BK, you're the Cowboys fan. I'll send it your way. Is there any surprise that the Philadelphia Eagles want to interview Kellen Moore for the head coaching position, or is this kind of fit with the fast meteoric rise of one Kellen Moore?
Well, they can't have him. They're not allowed to take him. That's all I care about. No, you know.
They can pick his brain.
No, it's funny because Kellen Moore, it seems like he had a really good opportunity to be the head coach at Boise State, and that didn't work out. And then we found out that he kind of turned that job down.
But it was also reported it was done for a little while.
Right, yeah. There was a thought that Kellen Moore was going to leave to take the Boise State job, and then maybe he got cold feet and decided, no, I want to stay with the Cowboys. He signed a 3-year extension with the Dallas Cowboys to remain as their offensive coordinator. But I think a big part of that is he was looking for an NFL head coaching job. I didn't think it was going to happen this offseason, right? I figured he was going to have another year or two as the Cowboys' offensive coordinator before teams would come calling. And look, Kellen Moore did some good things this past year as the Cowboys' OC, but without Dak Prescott, I mean, the statistics for the Cowboys' offense just weren't very good. So I figured, all right, Kellen Moore maybe lost a little bit of lust around the rest of the football world with what the Cowboys did in 2020, but maybe that's not the case. And he's a great offensive mind. He's done some really, really good things with Dallas KD over the last couple of years. So, obviously, the Eagles have gotten the chance to see it firsthand twice a year over the past couple of seasons. Maybe they are interested. I don't know if they're going to make the hire, but the Eagles need to figure out their offense, right? They've got a ton of money invested in Carson Wentz. That thing did not work out at all this past season. So, it doesn't surprise me that they're potentially looking at every offensive guy out there to try to find a way to make that investment more worthwhile.
No, it doesn't. I mean, it didn't surprise me, the interest in him, but I was surprised. I figured that was going to be a done deal. I knew they were looking at the DC who played there that they ended up hiring. But Moore was their first guy, and not just like trying to be first on the scene reporter guy. Like really reputable people were saying, no, this is a done deal. It's just about figuring out money. And then all of a sudden it didn't happen. So that was him backing out. And I think for him, you know, I love all these animal videos. Animal videos are great, especially in this type of climate. You know, you don't want to turn on one of the three political things. You're just thinking, all right, let me watch something. And I love whenever like one small penguin will actually dip in for the first time to the cold water. And then all of a sudden you see three or four others like, oh, we can do this. They dip in. And this is what this is. He's 32 years old. 10 years ago, he jumps at that Boise State job. But because of all the other examples of younger guys, I think Kellen Moore is thinking bigger. And I think he could be a head coach really quickly. And I think it sounds like he wants to jump on it, Rod.
Yeah, he must have gotten him. I don't know who his agent is. Is his agent Bob Lamont, too? I want to know who his agent is.
It's Scott Boris, which is even worse. No, I'm kidding.
I don't know. I don't know at all. I thought I heard somewhere that it might have been Lamont. But either way, there are only like four or five of these super agents, as you know. You just named none of them. And these guys, oftentimes behind the scenes, they're manipulating things. And I'm not saying that this is what happened, but that Boise State venture could have easily fallen through because that agent went, listen, man, I've had my ear to the street, and your name has come up. 3-4 different times with different teams saying, hey, what's up with Kellen Moore? Is he ready yet? So I wouldn't do the Boise State thing. I would just stay in the NFL and keep the buzz going. And you know that offense at Dallas is going to be high-powered because you got so many damn weapons. So stay there rather than go to Boise State. And then, not saying you're going to disappear into obscurity, but there's a good chance your name will be hotter, you know, with the Cowboys as an OC than it will as the head coach at Boise. And the coaches do that, right? Think about I know we're not talking about Texas right now, but think about A.J. Milwee, right? A.J. Milwee was the offensive analyst or assistant with the Alabama Crimson Tide this year, and he's going to come over here and be the quarterback's coach with Steve Sarkisian. He was the offensive coordinator for the Akron Zips, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
But decided, all right, I'm going to give up on being the offensive coordinator for the Akron Zips, and I'm going to go be the offensive analyst / assistant with the Alabama Crimson Tide. And there's a better chance of me being discovered there, making the right connections I need to there, even though I'm lower on the totem pole than me being higher on the totem pole at Akron. You know what I mean? I think it's the same mindset for him. I know Boise, I'm not dissing Boise, but, you know, you stay right there with the Dallas Cowboys, the Dallas Cowboys OC,
right,
you're going to get much more notoriety than being a head coach at Boise State. That's just the reality.
No doubt about it. I mean, look at Brian Harsin, right? He did great things at Boise State, but it took him, 7 or 8 years as the head coach there to get a big-time college football job. Like, I think Kellen Moore would have been resetting himself a little bit if he took that Boise State job, because he would have had to go there in a, I don't want to call it a tough situation, because Boise's always good, but they expect big things every year. Like, if you don't win 10 games at Boise State now, you're a failure. So, a lot of pressure there. And yeah, like you said, Rodby, you get way more notoriety and TV time when you're with the Dallas Cowboys than you do when you're with the Boise State Broncos.
Yeah, and as brilliant as this show is, and I mean, you guys listen, it's going to be pretty brilliant.
Damn right.
you know, we're not the only ones that look at Boise State and think about their own little ecosystem and that it's easier to win there, and that all of a sudden you can go there and win a bunch and people are going to question you. It's the equivalent of a really, really good power hitter, but he's been in Colorado. Is Larry Walker really a good hitter?
Right.
How do we even value him, right? And so I think it can set you back a little bit.
Yeah. By the way, we won't take any Akron Zips slander on this program.
Hell no.
They're in the MAC, baby.
MACtion.
The MAC was undefeated in bowl season this year. There were only two conferences that went unbeaten in bowl season in college football season. The Big 12 and the MAC. The two best conferences in the country. No real surprise there at all. But, yeah.
Hey, when the MAC comes out of commercial breaks, because you watch a lot of MAC action, how often do they play Return of the MAC?
Not often enough.
They usually just show sausage, right?
They usually show sausage and Mark Morrison actually eating the sausage. So they do play on the words very well. They're big on puns with the MAC. But we'll see what happens. Kellen Moore reportedly getting an interview with the Philadelphia Eagles to become their next head football coach. I think that wouldn't be great for the Dallas Cowboys. I don't expect him to get it just yet, but the fact that he is getting interviews shows you that he might not be long for the job in Big D. He is a fast riser in the coaching profession. What about on defense, guys, with Dan Quinn? That news dropped a couple of days ago. Dan Quinn going to be the next defensive coordinator for the Dallas Cowboys. They have reportedly hired Joe Witt Jr. as the team's secondary / defensive pass game coordinator as well. So it wasn't only Mike Nolan who got relieved of his duties last week. It was also most of the defensive assistants that were on the Cowboys staff last season under Mike McCarthy. Joe Witt Jr. coached 11 seasons under McCarthy when McCarthy was in Green Bay. He's actually been in Cleveland this season working as their secondary coach / pass game coordinator. Rod B., any thoughts on just the combination of those guys and kind of how the Cowboys' defensive staff is starting to come together?
Yeah, I mean, this is I don't want to say comfort hire. It's not, but I do. There's familiarity with Mike McCarthy here, because Mike McCarthy and he were together. He was a quality control coach with the Packers in 08, but then he became their DB coach from, I want to say, from
09 to 17.
Yeah.
Exactly, right.
So
he was with them for a long time.
Yeah, he was with them for a long time. So he trusts Witt, and I think that's part of it, that he trusts Joe Witt Jr. From what I can see, from what I've gathered, his time with Atlanta and his time with Cleveland right before that, nothing stellar. I mean, it's the numbers for, I think, for his time in Cleveland, they were seventh in passing yards allowed, 17th in touchdowns allowed, 17th in net yards per attempt. I mean, they were decent secondaries. So we'll see how he can develop this Cowboys crop of DBs. That's going to be the big thing. They got to start developing this group of DBs. Last year, they were underwhelming, to say the least. So I think he trusts him. Dan Quinn, I'm not sure what Dan Quinn's going to coach. I know he can coach. Maybe he'll just coach DCs, but maybe he'll coach defensive line too. I know they're interviewing a defensive line coach. This may actually connect with Texas. Tosh Lupoi's name has come up several times for that defensive line position for the Cowboys. And he's with Atlanta too. So they might be pulling a lot of stuff from that Atlanta coaching staff.
God, it's like Vinny Serrato when he went to the Redskins. Your gift to this world is recruiting. Tosh, what are you doing? Come on, man. We got a spot open in Austin. BK, I agree with Rod on a lot of that. But with the secondary, you talk about trying to develop these guys. And, yeah, but how many of these guys are going to be there? I mean, Awuzie, who else? Goodwin. There are a couple other DBs.
Jordan Lewis,
mm-hmm. that could be gone. This could look like a completely different secondary.
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad thing. I mean, the secondary was god-awful last year, and Awuzie and Jordan Lewis have not been nearly consistent enough since they were drafted at a college a few years ago. So only a couple of corners under contract for Dallas beyond this season. Trayvon Diggs is one of them. I think that's a piece. I think that's a guy you can obviously build around. And look, you see the Cowboys being linked to a lot of cornerbacks with that 10th overall pick for a reason. They need a lot of help at all areas on defense, but especially at the cornerback position. If I may, guys, can I go on a little bit of a soapbox on Dan Quinn? Because there's a lot of disapproval amongst Cowboys fans with the Dan Quinn hire. And I think a lot of it has to do with the way Dan Quinn's tenure ended in Atlanta, which wasn't great. But, you know, going through Dan Quinn's resume a little bit, the last time he was a defensive coordinator was with the Legion of Boom Seahawks. He was there from 2013 to 2014. Now, he walked into a pretty good situation, right? I mean, they had some talented dudes, Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor, Richard Sherman, Bobby Wagner, Michael Bennett. There were all kinds of studs on that Seahawks defense. There's no doubt about it. And Gus Bradley, who was the defensive coordinator, left to take a head coaching job with Jacksonville at the time. But no team in the NFL gave up fewer points and fewer yards than the Seahawks did in those two seasons. And they didn't have current Russell Wilson, right? They had game manager, young kind of Russell Wilson. They were so dominant on defense. They went 25-7 in those two seasons. They went 5-1 in the playoffs as well, right? They were one bad play call away from winning back-to-back Super Bowls. I think everybody knows what play call I'm talking about. But I'll never forget Dan Quinn's defensive performance in Super Bowl 48 against Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos. Y'all remember this? I mean, Peyton Manning was coming off maybe the best regular season a quarterback had ever had in the NFL. He was the MVP, and he looked lost. They lost that game 43-8. It was over at halftime, and everything Seattle was doing was confusing Peyton freaking Manning, like one of the best readers of defenses of all time. And look,
yeah, he studied for the test.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And I know things didn't work out in Atlanta at the end. Obviously, the blown lead in Super Bowl 51 is what everyone will remember, and more on that in a second. But this dude can still coach defense. And by the way, for part of the reason why I think his tenure in Atlanta didn't go the way it should have gone, they started to give him Bill O'Brien-type power over there, where they were giving him pretty much full control over personnel moves. And I think his evaluations of guys just wasn't that great, and I don't think he was ready for that. And look, Rod, you say it a lot. Like, Bill O'Brien, pretty good football coach. The GM part of the job did not work out. And once he was given too much power by Cal McNair, that's when things really, really went off the rails and fell apart down in Houston. I think that happened a little bit to Dan Quinn as well. He's not going to do that, have to do that in Dallas. So, man, I think this guy is still a stud. I don't think there was a more qualified person out there to take over this Dallas Cowboys defense. And he had teams playing in Super Bowls three times in four seasons. Like, his defense was so fundamentally sound and capable of winning games that he went to three different Super Bowls in 4 years. You know how good you have to be to be in that situation? And I know he failed on a couple of those, but you know how good you have to be to coach a defense that can get there repeatedly. I think this guy's a great hire, and I expect them to do really, really well in Dallas.
I don't think he's worn out as a coordinator either. I mean, he was at Hofstra, and we all remember that Hofstra defense in 2000.
The pride.
Ugh.
The Hofstra pride.
Those boys were flying around, chasing the ball. No, but he's been at Hofstra. He's been at Florida. But that was only for a year as the true DC. He's been at a lot of places. I remember reading about him with San Francisco stuff when he was with the Niners. He was quality control, associate head coach, defensive line. He did some different things, but there was always a good feel about Dan Quinn coming up. But then Seattle. He was only there for those 2 years where he hadn't – I don't think he's completely worn through his evolution. But being a head coach and understanding defense, I think this is a good hire. I like it a lot. And, Rod, one thing, too, I mean, BK is right. He got too much leverage and too much power in Atlanta. And to me, that's just Arthur Blank. Arthur Blank's, like, from by all accounts, he's just a really good human being and will give second chances and third chances. And it wouldn't have been a second chance. I think it was more trying to reward him for what he had done in Atlanta. But it was too much power.
Yeah, I mean, you see that often, right? I think the owners, the guys at the top of the organization, they will see a coach do a great job at actually coaching with that one aspect of it, and then they decide to, and I think it's ill-advised, reward him with more responsibility instead of giving him help to help him kind of shoulder that burden of responsibility, right? Give him a true personnel man that can help him identify talent that fits his vision. Give him, you know, try to give him help when it comes to the capologist. They even had Bill O'Brien in charge of capology. He fired his capologist. He was like, at one time he was a capologist, the offensive coordinator, the play caller, the head coach, and the GM. And it's like, man, no one man can do all those jobs. It's impossible. Sometimes it's owners just being cheap and they want one person to do everything. And sometimes it's just them being lazy. And sometimes it's just them not really understanding how tough each of those jobs actually is. But either way, I'm all for, unless you got a Belichick, which, come on, guys. I mean, it's right. One of those guys. I mean, Parcells, I guess you can throw out there, but those are once-in-a-generation type guys. Unless you have one of those types of players, I think one of those types of coaches and one of those types of football minds, you need the hierarchy of leadership to help display some of that burden.
Yeah, Kanye West said it best. No one man should have all that power, and I think that led to the demise of Bill O'Brien in H-Town. I think that's unquestioned at this point, and I think that also led to some of the problems Dan Quinn had in Atlanta. But guys, it seems to me from the surface that the Cowboys have two guys who know a little bit about winning on their coaching staff, with Mike McCarthy and with Dan Quinn. And they took the place of guys who did not know nearly as much about winning in Jason Garrett and Mike Nolan. Of course, they need more talent. Every coach needs talent. And obviously, talent helps you win as a head football coach or as a defensive coordinator. But these guys, these should be the type of guys the Cowboys are looking for, because the Cowboys are trying to win. They're trying to do something they haven't done in 2.5 decades, and they're hiring guys who have been there. So I think it makes sense.
I think the good thing, too, we talk about it with Texas, how some of the infrastructure is already set up, and sometimes you don't really know how big the rebuild is until you get through half the rebuild. And a lot of times that's the case. Mm-hmm. And so with the Cowboys, the good thing is that the old crazy man, what's the narcissist's name? Oh, Jerry Jones, that guy. he is already given way to them actually drafting well. And I told you, BK, I was laughing just as a college football fan watching the draft. It was the 1 year, and we went through like 3 or 4 rounds, and I thought, oh no, what happened? That was fun for like 10 years watching their draft picks.
Oh, just blowing it year after year after year.
Yeah, and Martin was one of them, and I thought, they talked him into taking him?
Yeah.
Oh, and I knew. I didn't need to see any reports. I didn't need to see insider reports. I knew, okay, the old man, at least he's given something up.
Yep. Yeah, he won a Johnny Football Hut year, right? And he got talked out of Johnny Manziel.
That would have been a good pick for y'all.
And into Zach Martin. Yeah, sure it would have. I've got this theory, or more of a formula, and it's more of you guys than me, not you two, not the two of you, but just sports fans in general. Sports fans have a scientific formula of criticizing coaching hires, and I've learned this and developed this over the years. So if, and this is applying right now to Texas, right, with Steve Sarkisian, because he's filling out his coaching staff. If a head coach knows the guy that he's hiring, oh, he's hiring his buddies.
Yep.
Those are comfort hires. If he doesn't know the guys that he's hiring, it's an unknown commodity. He's hiring an unknown commodity. We have no idea if this guy's going to work at all.
How are they going to work together?
If it's a high-profile hire, well, he's failed at previous stops. It can't be great. He got fired over there. That means he can't be good. If it's a low-profile hire, He's got no skins on the wall.
Javali.
This guy's got no resume. He's never done this before. He's never been anywhere close to here before. It feels like sports fans just pick whichever two fits, and they criticize the hire accordingly.
I think you hit four there, but yeah, I get
you. No, they pick two of the four.
Okay,
they pick two of the four that like fit the narrative. And look, sometimes it's right, right? Not every coach works,
funny.
And it's fair. I've had those criticisms of guys before as well, but it feels like we've almost made that a sports fan scientific formula with how we want to criticize our coaching hires.
So I've gone every direction there watching this forever, right? You know what the answer is? You just don't know, and Rod, every scenario can be different, which is why I truly believe kind of what I've heard about Joseph at Notre Dame, at least from the eyes of someone who I really respect and trust, doesn't mean that it's not going to work down here or that, however, like we said earlier, you combine a staff, it's different. I mean, if I'm a Dallas fan, I'm happy about the Quinn hire, and I'm just hoping that we can kind of rebuild defensively with talent.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a talent issue. I've always said offensively, the scheme matters more. You can gain more of a schematic advantage offensively. There are more cheat codes that exist on the offensive side of the ball that always have been, and now it seems like the sport is inundated with those cheat codes, and the rules are slanted to help the offense. Everybody wants offense to succeed over defense, but on defense, it's about just getting players. You just need ballers. You just need to go get you a game wrecker. You need a guy that demands a double team consistently. You just got to go find a guy that can cover man-to-man. Go do it. The Rams are probably the best example. They went and got the best cover corner in the NFL. They got the best defensive lineman in the NFL. That's how they built the best defense now currently in the NFL. That's how defense works. You go get ballers. That's how it works. Your schematic advantage can only do so much. What's the last great evolutionary adaptation or philosophical achievement on defense? What was it? What was it?
It helped.
John Heacock's defense.
I was about to say,
inverted
Tampa
2.
Inverted
That's
Tampa
the last
2.
Thing. And before that, it's like,
zone blitz.
Exactly.
Mad Dog.
They're few and far between, brother, on the defensive side of the ball. But on offense, it's like one every other week. It's like, oh, no, we got the RPO. Now they got the PRO. Now they got, oh, man, they got a new screen they figured out. Or they got the orb motion. Or they got the jet sweep. Or they got the zone read. They got something every other year. They're coming up with a new concept on offense that's going to help them. The up-tempo is always another cheat code on offense. On defense, ain't no cheat codes. You better go get some dogs that know how to play. If you ain't got some dogs, your scheme ain't going to matter at all. It's all about the Jimmys and Joes on defense. The X's and O's, not so much.
No doubt. All right, let's get some high school football up next in one and done. We saw Jimmy and Joes. We saw X's and O's. And I saw from all four teams in 6A in Division I. Man, I watched both games, and it was fantastic football. One of those teams is from here in Austin, and it's the best one I've ever seen from that program.
I like that five-star recruit at Kentucky. He's been here, and he's going to stay here. It's one-and-done time. Here's Kevin Dunn.
One-and-done time, and it's been one of those weeks where we just got too much stuff to hit. I'm sure we're going to be that radio show in a week. It's like, hey, remember what happened last week? Because there has been a lot of stuff, obviously not only with the Sark hire, but just, I mean, all over. And if you're from Austin, or if you just like high school football and you're living in Texas, great year for high school football. You know, we gave college football a lot of love and the NFL a lot of love for making this thing happen, and it was needed. I talked about Gene Chizik on the coaches' watch of the national championship game, thanking the other three coaches and saying, no, I'm just telling you as a fan, like, seriously, America needed y'all. We needed this. So definitely in a weird year, a tough year during the pandemic, the fact that high school football, guys, was able to get this off. Because I know that we've seen people on Twitter that certainly – we're saying there's no way college football should even try this. Well, there were issues, there were obstacles, there were hurdles, but they got through it and we got it done. And I'm glad we did. I hope those people could be adults now and say, well, you know what? I was wrong and not right about everything, and we got it done. So that's a good thing. But guys, we all thought, Rod, I know that some of the high school shows here, they felt like as this thing was kind of unfolding in October and 5A and 6A starting late, that it was going to be a miracle to actually get to this point.
Yeah, it's actually amazing some of the stories that you've heard of, you know, at the high school level of, and you know, really high school level, the college level, and the pro level of teams executing protocols, being really disciplined and getting through the season. I'll admit, there's no way I was very pessimistic about being able to finish any sports season at all. And I don't think we had one sports season that had to discontinue their season. Everybody forged ahead and were able to get it done. A lot of ingenuity. And it actually, everybody should be really proud of the fact that they were able to get through their seasons given all the trials and tribulations.
PK, you do play-by-play for Austin High, so I know that you were in tuned on this, and there was definitely, and understandably so, I'm not trying to be here and say, oh my God, you guys were scared and hitting the alarm button for nothing. I can only imagine with the UIL just thinking, is this thing really going to finish?
Yeah, I mean, I had my doubts, right? I wasn't sure this thing would get started. I remember coming on this show and saying, there's no way they're going to play high school football this year, right? I didn't think they were going to find a way to justify it, but they were able to start it, obviously, and thankfully they're going to be able to finish it this weekend. It's awesome. It's great for the kids, great for the parents, great for the coaches. Just sports in general gave us some sense of normalcy in what was the least normal year any of us have ever been a part of.
Yep, so props to them for showing the discipline to be able to get this done. But, guys, I watched both semifinal games for 6A Division I last night, and I've been watching high school football for most of my life. And here in the state of Texas, I mean, we were well before any of the other states that I've heard of that were actually televising high school football games. And obviously we know, I mean, heck, we know how big it is in this state. But I was talking with Rod during the break. I don't know if I've seen more talented and just better coached football teams for the Final Four. And so Westlake, Galena Park, North Shore was an epic game. Galena Park, North Shore, 29-game win streak, 2-time defending state champ. These guys are loaded. Their quarterback's going to Auburn. They got a receiver going to A&M. They got guys going everywhere, and they're well-coached, mm-hmm. and they're tough. And the effort I saw on both, I mean, they are every bit the part of a 2-time defending state champion at the highest level in the state of Texas. Tons of talent, tons of grit. And I was really damn impressed. Westlake was lucky to actually stay in that game. They got up 17-7. But I will say this. I've watched Westlake, and I've watched a lot of good Westlake teams. And I've said this all year long. So this isn't something that prisoner of the moment after the game I said, I'm putting my stamp down. BK, you know I told you before they played Austin High, this is the best Westlake team I've ever seen. It's the most complete Westlake team for sure I've ever seen. So that means special teams, mm-hmm. that means defense, and that means offense.
Yeah, I was a little surprised to hear you say that considering Westlake just won the state championship last year. Right? And I was like, well, I knew they lost some guys from last year's team, and I figured, all right, they're probably going to take a little bit of a step back, but now they're just as good, if not better, and getting to see them in person a couple of times this year, they're damn good. They're obviously well-coached with Todd Dodge. That coaching staff has been together for a number of years, and man, they play their tails off. They really do. And they were underdogs in that game, 5.5-point dogs to Galena Park North Shore. Not that I know anything about
really
high school football lines.
Because Trampy, my buddy, who's a degenerate like you, set a line
I'm not a degenerate.
Well, you're not. He actually is, though. With some of our friends, and he put it down as Westlake. He took Westlake 3, and he got a lot of crap for that.
He took Westlake -3?
He set the line, and he set it as Westlake -3, and he took a bunch of crap for that.
Well,
but he nailed it.
Almost cost himself some money right
there.
Yeah,
I know, exactly.
I mean, come on, man. North Shore coming in on that 29-game win streak. But no, I mean, Westlake, they played well, and look, it looked like North Shore had the better athletes. I hate to say that. I don't mean to be demeaning to Westlake.
It's racist, but...
But no, it's not.
Okay.
It just looked like they had better athletes from watching them play football.
It's an observation.
Okay.
Yes, it's an observation. Right.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, some people look beyond skin color when looking at football, KD, but apparently you don't. they fought their tails off, and they had to hang on for dear life for a while. North Shore took the lead, but Westlake mounted a really, really good drive down the stretch. Big fourth down conversion for Cade Klubnik, and... happy for him, man. Hopefully they can finish the job on Saturday.
So Westlake was worn out, and the right side of the offensive line, they said that it averages 350, and I'm not sure if it's that, but it's damn close. And their right tackle, 77, was a beast for North Shore. Their whole offensive line, I mean, the way they put that thing together, BK is not kidding. They probably were the most talented team, but I don't want to take away from also the way they kind of designed their program, and there's a reason they've won that many games. These kids know exactly what the hell they're doing, and it was just fun to watch back and forth. I felt like North Shore was going to win that. They go up 21-17, and there's just an obvious obviously worn out Westlake defense, but Klubnik was able to make a huge throw to a kid named Michael Taft. And Taft, to go with Nick Morris and Hayden Bray, are on all three levels of their defense as good as I've seen at that position, and Morris being the best linebacker I've seen at Westlake. So they're really well distributed, and there's a balanced team. It's the most complete team I've seen them have. And then I got online, CW33 online. Little Dallas shout out for you, BK.
Yeah, man.
Watching Southlake Carroll and Duncanville.
Were you watching George Lopez later that night?
Well, yeah, I just kept it on.
Everybody Loves Raymond.
And little
was
Everyone Loves Raymond.
Too,
I went through the whole thing.
Nice.
But both those teams were, I mean, pretty much what I'm saying is of the Final Four, any of them could win state and could have won it in any other year, and it would be more than respectable where you're like, holy cow, this is a state championship quality team. Duncanville and Carroll, both those teams can ball. Duncanville, I think for a lot of people, was the favorite. Southlake Carroll, Riley Dodge, Todd Dodge's son, was able to, with their run game, they were able to hold off Duncanville. And as I'm watching that, I'm just thinking, oh my God, I just don't remember watching a Final Four that was that good. Big shout out to Hayes. Hayes gets all the way there and then ends up losing, but Hayes, for that type of program to be able to go that far and play the way they did, man, there's a lot of love there. I remember Hayes as a kid being so damn good with Shelton in the 4A level, and it's cool to see them doing that. You got Cedar Park, who's going to be playing for it with Westlake. Mm-hmm. So we've got two different Central Texas schools, and I don't know about y'all, but the second I hit, it probably was when I was still a senior, but the second I became a freshman at Texas, like, there was no, I just didn't hold any, there are rivals in Central Texas for me. I wanted Austin High, Bowie. I want everyone to win to make the region look good. So I hope Westlake and Cedar Park can do that. And then also shout out to Liberty Hill. I watched that game. I watched three high school football games, I believe, on this weekend. And Liberty Hill, that was a hell of a game. Yeah. Gut-wrenching, and just lost at the end in a shootout.
Heartbreaker. Yeah, in overtime, they went for two in the win, and they fumbled on the exchange, right? Just a tough loss for Liberty Hill, who went through a lot this year with the passing of their head coach just a couple of months ago. But it's good to know that you're not one of those guys who won't talk to any Lake Travis people like 25 years after you've graduated.
Well, first off, they weren't. Yeah, there are still some people that do that, Rod. And so, one, Lake Travis, those were the guys that you go wakeboard with and maybe with a one hitter. You know, that was a 3A school. There was no rivalry with sports. So, they'd be more for me, Bowie and Austin High. And I've got tons of friends from both. Like, are you kidding me? You got to grow out of that quickly.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if Baker Mayfield will ever grow out of that.
That's a good example right there.
But it's awesome. Cedar Park playing tomorrow night, and they're taking on Denton Ryan with Jatavion Sanders, who is Texas's only five-star signee in the class of 2021. So that'll be a tough matchup, and Westlake the Dodgeball will be a lot of fun. Rod B., the Shaps, 7.5-point favorites. I'm looking right now, so Westlake expected to win back-to-back state championships.
There's actually people that put that online and aren't worried.
I don't know if they're not worried, okay, but they are online. I'm worried, actually.
I think they call it, don't they have like a, because Craig talks about this, it's not, I don't know what the way they refer to it, but they do have a system to try to predict games, but it's not supposed to be compared to gambling lines.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Right.
They do have a system, though, like a specific, like a computer or a simulation. I don't know what they do, but Craig Way talks about it. But, yeah, it's not about, like, the gambling line, but I guess people probably use it as
Here are some drugs. Don't take them.
Yeah. I give you the over-unders. We got everything for these state championship games this weekend, man.
Rod, one thing that we talked about, though, and I'm curious.
It's going to be on TV, too, right? The Dodgeball?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Fox Sports
Southwest.
All four games.
Yeah,
huh?
All four games are going to be on, so definitely check those out. Rod, we talked about it a little bit during the break, just how Central Texas football has just gone to this different level. And, you know, you definitely saw that, and you were coming from a place that was already loaded with high school football in Houston. But just in general throughout the state, so not only Central Texas, I mean, it does seem like these guys, it's just more the – you know, how specific they are with some of the details in the coaching and the game plans. Like, it's almost like small little colleges.
Yeah, no, it is. They've done a phenomenal job. And the way you put it, like a small little college, they're conducted like that because they've built these programs where, and you see it, Katy has done it and North Shore has done it from Houston, where I am, at least in that Houston area, where, and you know this, KD, they're learning the same plays, taught the same techniques.
Oh, yeah, feeder system.
The culture. the culture building. Yeah, it starts when these guys are in sixth grade. Yep. Or even before that, if you ask Jason Nassour. Yep. So it's like, yeah. You know what I mean? And when you get that, when you get that alignment, oh, so sorry to be bringing up Tom Herman.
How dare you.
But when you get that that alignment from the high school level, and then the middle school coaches are also bought in, so they're teaching your same system and the same philosophy, and then you could get the little league coaches or the 7-on-7 flag football coaches to also think to start teaching the same technique and all that, man, you can really build something special, because then you have the perfect execution of those techniques and of those plays by the time you get to the high school level. And that's less you have to teach and more you can focus on in terms of expanding the overall game plan and blueprint for your offense. It's phenomenal what they're doing, man. That is some fantastic football being played when you watch it, and they're well coached. I don't know if there's better high school coaching in the country than it is in the state of Texas.
Yeah, no, you may be right about that. Tony Salazar, quickly, BK, mm-hmm. the DC yep. for Westlake, is – and good dude, yeah.
Good
so,
dude.
Yeah, of course, you've been able to cover him and talk to him. So one of the things I got a tweet today was, do you think he'd maybe go to that college level? Because he is one of those guys, when you look at his football knowledge, like he could probably go coach different spots. I don't know if he's waiting to maybe get the head job here, but the fact that you got Dodge and then Salazar running that's pretty tough in high school.
That's special, no doubt about that. The four state championship games, the 5A games tomorrow night, Cedar Park and Denton Ryan at 7 o'clock, and then Saturday afternoon you'll get Westlake taking on South Lake Carroll in the Dodge Bowl, Fox Sports Southwest for those games. By the way, Flex ATX tonight, yep. special
Snoop
edition,
Snoop.
Tonight from 8 to 10 with our man Snoop Daniel. So he'll preview the state championship games. It's the triple option with RBKD. Good stuff on One and Done, talking high school football. Weird to transition to this Earl Thomas story, but that's what's coming up next.
Man, I didn't plan that
and
out well.
Off the record, I think we all remember what took place last Easter involving Earl Thomas and now his ex-wife Nina. Well, we've got more to the story. Something happened around Christmas that has Earl in hot water again. That's next.
D.D. Mega Doodoo. I'm sorry, Mangoodoo.
Once it's turned on, the sign will spell out Deli Cat Essen.
Well, I don't get the rain, the comb.
Well, congratulations. Continue good sex in the Big East. Thank you, Jimmy.
And boom goes the dynamite.
It's time for another edition of Off the Record.
Do it live! I'll write it and we'll do it live! F***ing thing sucks!
Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. I'm Rod Babers, hanging out with my man Kevin Dunn and Brad Keltner. It's time for another edition of Off the Record. And this time, Earl Thomas once again finds himself basically in TMZ, on TMZ News. And that's never a good thing. Sometimes it won't be a bad thing when TMZ is stalking you and TMZ has you as one of their top headlines, but usually it means that you're in a little bit of trouble. And this time, Earl Thomas' wife, well, this time, again, Earl Thomas's wife is claiming the NFL star did something that was very disturbing. She claims he went ballistic on her the day after Christmas, attacking her and her family and punching through a window in what she called a drunken rage. And she says it isn't the first time that he's completely lost it. Earl Thomas, of course, is denying all of these allegations. TMZ says they spoke with a member of his camp who says the claims are false and that the couple is currently on good terms. Nina Thomas spelled it out in a court document obtained by TMZ Sports, saying, quote, she's scared of the 31-year-old former Baltimore Ravens player following what sounds like a terrifying December 26th incident. In the documents, Nina, who filed for divorce from Earl in November, she says she agreed to spend Christmas with Earl at her parents' house in Orange, Texas, so he could be with their children. Nina, though, says Earl chose to stay out all night drinking on the holiday and came back the next morning and flew off the handle. Nina says after sending harassing text messages to her phone, Earl showed up at the house visibly intoxicated. Nina says he told her told her some bad stuff. I won't say it on the radio. Mm. In front of their kids, and then followed Nina outside after she went to get some things for her children in the car. Nina says Earl screamed at her in the front yard. So she says she locked him out of the house. That's when she claims he snapped. Nina says Earl was irate, beating on the windows of the house. She claims she then called Earl's mother to try to get him to calm down, but when she arrived, Earl was still in front of the house screaming obscenities and clearly enraged. Nina says Earl then put his fist through one of the house's windows, causing blood to spill all over the front porch. Cops were called to the scene in reference to a disturbance, and officers say they were able to question Earl a short time later at the hospital over it all. Officers say Earl told them he admitted to putting his hand through the window, though he says Earl reported no crime was committed to cause his injuries. The police docs list the case as inactive currently right now.
Wow.
All right, so guys, what are your thoughts? I mean, there's some more details about this, but we know that as a couple, they've had their issues. We know about the philandering of Earl Thomas and his wife finding him and then stalking him and pulling a gun on Earl at that time. We know about that, but this is another incident, a separate incident between Earl and his wife, Nina. BK, your thoughts?
Crazy. I mean, the story that happened last April was bizarre, right? Where Nina used Snapchat to track down where Earl Thomas was. And yeah, she showed up to this girl's house, I guess his side piece's house, and pulled a gun on him. And apparently Earl was there with his brother, and that was, I didn't think you could get anything more bizarre than that. And I don't think this story is more bizarre, but I was hoping that that would be a wake-up call for Earl Thomas, and he'd be able to, you know, get his life turned around. Now, these are all allegations at this point, so I don't want to assume anything, but apparently yesterday a judge granted Nina Thomas a restraining order against Earl, and he's got to stay at least 400 feet away from her house here in Austin. So probably not a good sign, and that shows, KD, that their relationship is not on a great basis right now, and it shows that Earl might still be going through some things, unfortunately.
Yeah, let me give the obligatory that I always give, because I really mean it. I hate that we live in a society where we know this and where we focus on it so much, but obviously, if something's going on seriously with him, them, both, I hope they can figure all that out. And it's just sad, just kind of reading the story today. I mean, all of it was sad with the kids involved, especially. And like you said, this is all allegations, so we'll see how much is true. But, yeah, I mean, it could be a real self-check moment for one of them.
Guys, some of these details are just so crazy. So here's another detail from the story. So in court documents, Nina says Earl's aggression toward her and her family didn't stop there. She says Earl threatened to come back to her parents' house to burn all of her things if she came back to their house in Austin. Like, basically, don't come back to the house in Austin, or, you know, I'll burn all your stuff. Nina says Earl then sent an intimate video. She says Earl sent an intimate video. I'll make sure she says this. This is all her allegations. She said Earl sent an intimate video of him and her in a group text to her parents and to their nanny.
Oh, God, yeah.
To further torment her, Earl sent an intimate video of himself and another woman to her phone as well.
Yeah, I mean, I hope all that's not true, right? I hope those allegations are false. But I think we knew when Earl Thomas couldn't find a job in football this year that something's going on with him, right? Whether these allegations are true or not, something is not quite right with Earl Thomas. He's one of the best players in the league. He has been. He's a borderline Hall of Famer. And the fact that that dude couldn't get a job has nothing to do with his play on the field, right? There's some stuff going on that hopefully, yeah, they can get it figured out. I mean, this goes beyond football, right? Just caring about them as people. Hopefully they can get this relationship figured out, or they can just move on from this relationship and get their life started without each other, because that might be best at this point, guys.
They can't do that. They're co-parenting. They can't. They got to find a way. Like us in this country, even though one side hates the other side and fundamentally disagrees, we have to live in this country together. We have to figure out a middle ground where we can all come together. There's got to be a compromise. And so they have to find a compromise. They can't decide we're just going to live our lives separately and never ever see each other again. They're parents. They got these creatures they created together. They have to co-parent. So, yeah, they got to figure this thing out. And maybe they need a mediator every time they see each other. Maybe they need a third party every time they see each other to be there to break them up and say, hey, these are the rules. So, were you guys talking and everything so y'all can see the kids or whatever? But whatever it is, right now, it is toxic. Toxic to the point where somebody could get hurt or go to jail.
Yeah.
We've seen allegations of guns pointed at the other one and, you know, them being violent with each other. They probably just need to stay apart until they can get a mediator where they have rules. rules in place as to what they can do when they're together, because this thing, I could see it, guys, I could see it going bad. Hell, if that gun was loaded and something crazy happened when Nina pointed a gun to his head when she caught him philandering with some other women, that could have been all types of crazy and went all types of wrong. They got to figure this thing out, man. I'm worried about Earl. I'm worried about their family. I hope they figure it out.
Yeah, me too. Me too. That's well said. So more craziness surrounding Earl Thomas and his wife, Nina. If anything else drops, we'll keep you posted there. But wishing the best to both of them and, of course, their family. It's the Triple Option with RBKD. Let's talk some Texas Longhorn football, some current Texas Longhorn football. Last night, pretty late, you might have missed it, you might have been asleep, but Steve Sarkisian was on SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt. We've got some audio from that conversation and also the latest rumors surrounding Sark's initial coaching staff here in Austin. That comes up next.